Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast. Literature can truly change people's lives. I mean, look, that's what we think anyway, and you do too because you're listening to Nightlife, and we always do a book segment at this time. On Books That Made Me, which is a version of the book segment, we like to ask our guests about the books that have meant something to them through their life. Tonight, we're going to be hearing from Trevor Ashley. Now, Trevor is somebody very special. If you haven't met him before, let me tell you about him. He's an award-winning star of the cabaret and musical theatre world, not just in Australia, but globally as well. So we actually have a real international artist here. He's toured his own shows in New York and London. Where else would you want to be on stage? He's appeared in films. He's recorded soundtracks for films and also starred in his own TV show. He's currently in rehearsals at the Capitol Theatre for Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. It opens on the 11th of February, and he's brought in tonight his three favourite books. Trevor, hello.
Hello, Andrea. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have you here. Now, you grew up in Australia, in Sydney.
Yes.
Do you still live here?
I still live here. I mean, for me, I've lived a lot of places, like, you know, at different times, but nothing replaces Sydney. It's the best place to live.
Were you always into music and singing as you grew up?
Yeah. As a young child, all I wanted to be was a singer. And my mother was very insistent that I learnt how to play piano and that I learnt to play trumpet and that I read music and did all of that sort of stuff. And I wanted to just be on the stage singing, and so that's whenever and she had to go and research where to put me because I'm not from a theatrical family at all, but she really helped and figured out where to put me, and I was in youth theatre, and I was actually at Johnny Young Talent School, which will come up a bit later, I'm sure, but I was at Johnny Young Talent School when I was 4 years old.
I remember wanting so desperately to be on the Johnny Young Talent School, but my parents dissuaded me, and I think rightly so in retrospect. But your mum actually made sure that you learnt proper craft.
Exactly, and the knowledge behind what music is and how to do it properly. And so I was in singing lessons from, you know, a very young age, and but also I think learning to read music and play piano and play trumpet were instrumental, so to speak, in me having a proper career.
Mm. Now, how are the rehearsals going for Josephine's Technicolor Dreamcoat? And I wonder whether you have ever done it before. Off mic, we were just talking, and I went to a very ordinary high school in Australia, but we actually did a production of it.
Well, it's been around, and people have done this show for a very long time. I never actually did the show, but I had the cassette with Jason Donovan as Joseph from the West End production all those years ago. And then I saw it here in Sydney about 30 years ago, which was the last time the show has played Sydney.
Oh.
So for us, we're the first production in 30 years, and it is absolutely wonderful, and I have always loved the music, and I could sing you all the songs before I even got to do the production. So now I've gotten to do one of those shows that I loved as a child and that I listened to and knew all the music, and now I get to be in it. And so that's
exciting.
You know, it's so I was laughing because I've done now Les Mis, which came out as a child, and now this. So both of those shows that I knew very well when they first sort of hit us, and it was, yeah, so I'm thrilled.
You won't be the only one. There'll be lots of people listening tonight who remember, have seen a production of it before, remember the songs, can sing along to the songs.
Yeah.
I could. Are you going to tour it anywhere else but Sydney? Because there's people listening all over Australia tonight going, when's it coming to me?
At the moment, well, we've just finished in Melbourne and we're now doing Sydney, and then we're hoping that we'll continue on. But at the moment, we're just doing Sydney for the next 3 months.
All right. So in the next couple of months' time, keep your eyes and ears out because Trevor may well be coming to your town.
You never know.
So cross fingers because it is a fun production and, yes, you probably do remember at least one or two of the songs too. And speaking of big productions, we know that The World is coming to Australia, to Sydney specifically, for World Pride. So what are you going to be doing for that?
Oh, look, well, I'm going to try and do as many things as I can while doing eight shows a week. But I'm doing a few performances around. I'm hosting a couple of things and running around in between shows of Joseph. So it's actually wonderful. I'm going to the opening concert to
you
go and see Kylie
changed,
Minogue.
Right? You should be able to wear the Technicolor dream coat.
Well, if I was wearing that, I could, but unfortunately I'm dressed as a pharaoh, so I'm not sure whether that would be quite appropriate. But it's absolutely wonderful to see Sydney come alive, and already I'm feeling the bubbling and the excitement that's happening on the streets. So I think just being able to show off our city after being locked away for those 2 years, I feel like to show off the city, to show off how wonderful and accepting and incredible it is, I think that's going to be really special.
Oh, you're making it sound very special. I think lots of people are going to be coming from different parts of Australia to Sydney. So,
yeah, absolutely.
And why not? It's a good time for a party. Now, let's get to the books, shall we? You're invited on because you are a reader, but what has reading meant to you through your life?
Oh, look, I mean, I've found reading so special, and I love the world of a book because I get to imagine this world that's created for me before it's become a television show or a movie or whatever. And I love to be able to sort of see the characters and create those in my mind. And I think for me, I love both. I read mostly either fiction or autobiography. I'm a big autobiography fan, and I love to read about people's lives and about what they've done, especially in showbiz and in my industry. So I think for me, it's opened up worlds, and I've loved reading since I was very young, and I have a very extensive library at home, and I still can't give up real books. I can't give up real books. So like my friend would say to me, you've got to get a Kindle and I'm like, no, I want to feel it and I want to have it. I want it there. So for me, that's I'm old fashioned in that way.
You are a man after my heart. People are throwing out their books and I'm there at op shops and street side libraries, taking them all home and rescuing them.
Fabulous.
I know, right? So tonight it's Books That Made Me. And so we've all got books that we love. We'll have, in your case, and probably mine too, many books that we love.
Yes.
But these are books that actually made a big difference in your life. So the first of the three today is Holding the Man by Timothy Conagrave. It's set in an all-boys Catholic school in Melbourne. And Timothy Conagrave fell in love with the captain of the football team. And so began a relationship that was to last for 15 years, and it was a love affair that weathered disapproval and then ultimately separation and death. Tell us what it was about this book. How did you come to it?
This book was actually on my school's reading list when I was at high school.
Oh.
And I read it then for the first time, and I remember reading it then, and it was the first probably gay novel that I'd ever read, and knowing it's a true story and set in Melbourne and then Sydney, because they moved to Sydney, it just felt very close. And I think for me, that story resonated with me. At the time, I was confused and didn't know where I was in my life in terms of my own sexuality and what I wanted to be. And it certainly touched me in huge ways. And I think too, obviously, I grew up through the AIDS crisis. And so I was sort of too young at the time to be exposed to it in a huge way. But I went to a youth theatre called Shopfront Theatre in Carlton in Sydney. And I was doing plays there. And I remember that at one particular night, I hosted a show. I think I was 9 or 10, and the man I hosted it with was named Scott Redmond, and Scott would have been about 18 or 19. And it was sort of the last time he was on stage because he had full-blown AIDS at that age. And so for me, that you know, that experience of him as my friend and being older than me. But we had a great connection. It was the first time I'd ever seen someone do drag, and it was the first, and we hosted this event together. And I'll just never forget him and how wonderful and how sad it was that we lost him so quickly after that. And that was sort of my first experience. I would have been about 9 or 10 years old. And so I think when I read this book, it just resonated with me. And because I'd had just one experience, you know, thank God, because I was so young. But then when I started, you know, working as a drag queen on the Sydney scene when I was about 20, obviously it was very fresh in people's minds, and people were still dying, and there were, it wasn't as bad as the early 90s, but certainly, you know, I was working with people who had lost a lot of people. And so for me, this book just tells a beautiful love story, and it really is an extraordinary love story. But it also, I think because it's Australian, and it just hit home, and it's so beautiful. I mean, I cried just thinking about it, because
I can hear and see you getting quite emotional.
Yeah,
about it.
It is. And I, and of course, later on, my friend Tommy Murphy wrote the play, and so I got to see the play, and then I got to be in the movie. So I'm in the movie of Holding the Man, and so I don't know, it's a book that I think for a lot of certainly gay male Australians, it's, you know, a Bible to us. It's so sacred and just so brilliant and so beautifully written too. It's a beautifully written story, and it's so sad. I mean, you buckets and buckets of tissues to read it, but it is incredible, and I highly recommend it as if you've never read the story. It's a beautiful book and a wonderful story, and before its time in a lot of ways, you know, because you know, that was the time when it would have been so hard to get a gay novel that wasn't fiction published.
That really is my next question for you, and that is, for you, you know, you described it as the first gay novel that you'd ever read.
Yeah.
And we talk a lot about what it means to see yourself reflected in culture and to understand that other people are like you or have experiences like yours.
Yeah.
What did it feel like to read a book for the very first time that you could recognise yourself in?
Yeah, well, I think what was scary was that I did, and because I was a teenager, I felt such affinity with it. And for me at that time, I was sort of taken aback by the fact that I saw myself in the book.
You were taken aback?
Yeah, because I wasn't sure what was going on in my body and my head. And so I think, you know, it was the mid-90s and that was what
actually, there were a few books happened, around, you know, like that. People talk about looking for Ali Brandy as being for people of culturally diverse backgrounds, seeing themselves represented. And then for people who are not, you know, say of a migrant background, they gain some understanding of that experience by reading a book that they love. Would you put that in, for people who haven't read it, would you put that in that sort of space?
Absolutely. And I think
it's for
it is,
everyone.
It's a proper great Australian novel. It really is. And I would highly recommend everybody to see it, to read it, and then see the movie later. But definitely read it because it's so beautiful.
We definitely need to see the movie because you're in it.
Yeah, just for a hot second I'm in it.
So let's now move to your second book. And from here we go from Australia and from being close by and a story in an environment that we can understand to Tales of the City. And I would say that most, if not all, of our listeners tonight have read this. I've read it.
Yeah.
It's by Armistead Maupin, as we know, and it's a series of 9 novels. I think I've read about the first 4 or 5, I think, personally, written by an American author, and he did those books from about 1978 to 2014. I didn't realise that they went that long.
Yeah, he kept going.
Exactly, and they depicted the life of a group of friends in San Francisco, many of whom are LGBTQI+ as well.
Absolutely, and this book, I think, is one of those books that it was sort of like, hand back your gay card if you haven't read this book, you know. So for me...
And if you're not gay,
but you still, I mean, everyone should have read these. And I think for me, this book, this was one I discovered later. This was one that I, once I was out and on the scene and had, you know, been working as a drag performer, I was told by friends, a friend of mine said to me, have you ever read any of Armistead Moore? I was like, no. So I went and bought the first three, I think, and now subsequently I own absolutely everything he's ever written. But I absolutely love it because this is fiction, but fiction in a real place and written at a real time. So I think that what's so fascinating about this book is that he's obviously taken bits of people's lives and sort of stitched it into, but the setting and San Francisco, it's a love letter to San Francisco. But the fictional address of Barbary Lane and Mrs. Madrigal's house, it's one of the great, I think it's up there with Dickens in terms of, you can see everything about it. You understand where you are and what's happening and the people and the story and where it sort of goes is fabulous. And I love the fact that it's sort of serialized because, of course, it started out as a newspaper column and then was, published as a book. But because he wanted everyone to read it weekly, there's sort of a cliffhanger every single chapter. So you'd read the end and you'd go, oh, hang on, I've got to read the next bit.
But you can't. There was none of this on demand. There was none of this do a dump of things and binge read. You couldn't do it back then, could you?
No, because he was writing it in a newspaper. So I think the fact that it has survived so beautifully and has been and also, again, turned into television. But I just love the story. And I feel like the characters, because there are so many different kinds of characters and they're all trying and young in this novel. And as you say, when it gets up to the 2014, I think it was 14 novels or something he'd written as since 1978, I feel like was the first, is it? 1978.
Yeah, 1978.
Yeah, it was when it starts. So,
which one have you brought with you today?
I brought the first Tales of the City.
Okay, yeah, that's
so
nice.
Yes, this is the original one.
Yeah.
But to know those characters, Mary Ann and Mouse and Mrs. Madrigal, and just the fact that sort of twist. I hope I'm not spoiling it for anybody, but the twist of Mrs. Madrigal being trans, and just the story is so incredible. And I kind of wanted to rent a place on Barbary Lane. You read it, going, oh, I want to live there. I want to meet these people because they're so rounded, and there's such incredible stories, and you just want everyone to end up happy, and it sort of is, it's a very real life, I feel, novel.
And how do you think the novel stacks up today? Because popular culture is full of these kinds of stories that are about young people in their 20s and groups finding themselves, and we've all got them. I mean, everything from the serialized versions of Bridget Jones through to Friends or Seinfeld, which really encapsulate New York in the way that this series did for San Francisco.
Yeah.
But in some ways, sometimes you can look back at those things and you can say, oh gosh, that was very 90s. Now, this started in 1978. How do you think it stands up today?
Look, I think it still feels like a period piece now, especially even more now that it is very 70s. And it's funny to read, the things that they found sexy. And what's even weirder is that half those things have come back. So I find it quite hilarious that, there were things that they talk about that you go, oh my God. But just even the idea of, telephones and lost messages and all of those
plot devices and
exactly
things,
yeah. that we can't write about now unless we set it sometime else, So I feel like it was very of its time, but I feel like his writing is timeless in its own way.
I found it very gentle, his writing.
Gentle.
Very gentle, and it's a really lovely way to read about a group of people. It's not angry or aggressive. It's gentle and welcoming. I found it, as a non-LGBTQI+ person, just a beautiful story about really interesting people.
Yeah, and it really is, and I loved the twists and turns, and I think that's one of the gifts he has as a writer, is to give you that real moment at the end of each chapter where you go, oh, I can't believe that, which is why it makes wonderful television, and I love the TV series as well. And I got to meet him. He came out.
You met him?
I met Armistead Maupin. He came out to do a we used to have some dinners as fundraising dinners, and my friend Anthony actually organized these, and they were called Plucked. And it was all, and each sort of 6 months, they'd bring out an author, and we'd have a big charity dinner, and he would read a part of his, you know, well, with, in terms of Armistead, would read part of his book. And so I've heard him read, and then he was so available and chatty and wonderful. So it was one of those lovely things that, you know.
He matched up to expectations, because sometimes people don't in real life. You know, you idealise them as an author who's written a book you love, and then you meet them and they're, you know, shits, really.
Yeah.
And he wasn't. He was lovely.
No, he was fantastic and still willing to talk and sign and do all of that from his old books to his new books. So I just think he's fabulous, and I love this. And it's one of those ones, I think, that it's just a wonderful, gentle, as you say, but easy read, but really entertaining and funny and joyful.
You don't have to expend too many brain cells to get into it and love it.
No.
And that's really great. It's not one of those books that demands of you, yet it gives so much.
Yeah, it does. It really gives a lot. Yeah. I love it.
And so going from this beautiful, sprawling work of fiction over 14 novels or whatever it is, however many it is, we now go to another memoir. And this is the third book in the books that have made you. And our guest tonight, let us just remember, is Trevor Ashley, beautiful performer, actor, singer, writer and drag queen as well.
Yes.
And he's here at the moment touring a production of Joseph and His Technicolor Dreamcoat, just finished in Melbourne, is going to start in Sydney in a little while, hopefully elsewhere soon in Australia. So Trevor's third book tonight is called Not Quite Ripe, a memoir by Deborah Byrne. Now, Deborah's life has been a rollercoaster ride of successes, adulation, but also scandal and drugs and depression. And, you know, people will remember her from Young Talent Time. I remember her from Young Talent Time. And what we didn't know about her then was that her life had a darker side, and it went into some very dark places for her as a child, and then it recurred for her as an adult. So tell us a little bit more about this book.
Look, I have been a Deb Byrne fan since I was 5 years old, and my mother took me to see Cats. Another Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, of course.
And the biggest thing in the 80s,
yes. So I went to see Cats, and I remember her singing Memory and just absolutely being blown away by how extraordinary she was. And I became like this stalker of Deb Byrne as a 5 to 9 year old child.
We should all mention you were 5 to 9 years old. You were pretty harmless as a stalker.
Yes, exactly. So, but I loved her so much, and I'd watch everything she'd appeared on, and, you know, and then when she was doing Les Mis, my mother wrote to her and said, "My son is your biggest fan, and we're bringing him for his 8th birthday to see Les Mis. And is there a way you could sign his program or something afterwards?" So
your mum was fearless, wasn't
she? Yeah, she really was. And then the weirdest thing happened was mum was home one day and, of course, got a phone call on the landline, and she said, "Hello, is that Alana? Oh, it's Deborah Byrne here." Isn't that amazing? And so she said, "Absolutely, I would love to sign Trevor's program. So on the night he's coming to Les Mis, you call this number. This is my private dressing room number, and call me and remind me that it's that night, because I'm hopeless and I'll forget." So my mother did that, and she actually had organized for me to come backstage. I got to go on the stage, and this is where I think I had the theatre bug, but this really, that was it.
This made your life.
This made my life. That Deb took me on stage, and she had a whole cast assembled, and I have the signature of everybody in the cast, and they all sang me happy birthday.
No.
So.
Gosh.
So, yeah, so Deb did that for me. And I got to tell her that story on our opening night of Les Mis in Melbourne. And so she was absolutely thrilled. But when this book came out, I was completely, I needed to read it.
How old were you when this book came out?
I don't,
so you've got this memory
of
her.
It's recent. It's not that old. When was it? It was 2006.
Okay.
So I would have been 26. And I got the book, and I... It is it is harrowing as a read because her life has been full on. Like, you, there's things that you just, and that you might have even chosen not to talk about.
So abuse, for
but,
example.
From the abuse, but even just her drug use and the her sex tape being leaked. I mean, there's everything is in this book. And she's so honest. And you just, I started reading it in the evening one night, and it was a literal, couldn't put it down, and I stayed up reading it till 5 o'clock in the morning because it was so, it's really well written. It's a beautiful, you know, piece of work, but it's so emotional, and just everything that happens, you just go, that can't, no. How did you even get up from that? How did you even continue? And you sort of get to the end and you just are like, this woman is absolutely extraordinary in, apart from being an extraordinary talent, but just her resilience is extraordinary.
So put me back in that moment. You opened up this book. This is a book written by and about your absolute idol, the person who really got you onto the stage in your mind.
Yeah.
You've stayed up overnight, 5 hours. You've read the entire book cover to cover. It is filled with this terrible, harrowing stuff. Mm. How did you feel when it finished?
It was really sad. Like, I mean, you kind of get there and you just go, I'm devastated for you that this happened to you, and how nobody stopped, but like how did nothing sort of stop all these awful things? But some of them she did to herself, you know. Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of that in it, but to also know that she'd then get up and do 8 shows a week of you know, Sunset Boulevard and Les Mis and all of these things. I just find it's inspiring still. Like, it is inspiring.
Is that what you take from it?
I hope so. I think that's what she would hope I take from it. I think she'd hope that from everybody is, you know, but it is a full on, and it's big, like I'm holding it now, and it's a good...
Oh, it is quite large, isn't
it? It's a decent book. It's a good 500 pages.
And there's a lot of photos and things in it. Who should read this book?
Look, if you're a Deborah Byrne fan, absolutely you should read the book. But I think if you're interested in the history of entertainment in Australia and you want to know sort of, I guess, the reality of what things like Kids on Young Talent Time went through and you know, being a pop star so young and on television and so famous so quick, and what it can do. And I think it's a sort of, I guess, a cautionary tale about anybody who is desperate to be famous when they're too young. And that's, I think, why she called it Not Quite Ripe, is she wasn't ready.
Yeah. And is it a book for parents as well?
I think so, definitely. And I think if you've got kids who are desperate to be TikTok stars and desperate to be, you know, internet sensations, I think it's an interesting read to see what can happen if all of a sudden millions of people know who you are. And certainly for her, it was a lot. And yeah, but it's a really, really unbelievable, can't put it down read. I could not, honestly, I sat there. I would have started reading at 7 p.m. and finished at 5 a.m. It was a good 10 hours that I just had to keep going.
And again, we hear about these kinds of biographies, but to read one of these in an Australian context, it's very much an Australian story. She is an Australian artist, and her entire childhood and life was spent here, so it must have a particular resonance.
I think so, and I feel very I think we should be grateful that she was so honest in this book. Like, it's certainly not a glossy showbiz biography, which I know lots of them are, and some of them are a lot funnier than this. This is not funny. But it is great, and it's a really good read, and she's an incredible person. And, you know, I've met her since and as an adult and know her a bit better now, and it's just, you know, incredible. She's incredible.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you've given us a gift of 3 books this evening, Trevor. Thank you. Read them out again, their titles and their authors, so that we can go away and know what we should be looking up.
Holding the Man by Timothy Conagrave, Tales of the City, the first one, by Armistead Maupin, and Not Quite Ripe by Deborah Byrne.
Trevor, Ashley, thank you so much for presenting those books to us this evening.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.